in studio, I'm glad to welcome Councillor Andrew Montague, ex-Lord Mayor. How are you, Andrew? It's good to see you.
I'm very well, enjoying the sun today. Beautiful day.
Isn't it still nice out there?
Oh, it is,
great,
yeah.
Great, great. Okay, I want to ask you, how's things been going in the past? I mean, you're re-elected there, so feeling good?
Yeah, looking back now at the election, it was obviously a very tough election. I'm a Labour Party councillor and, you know, people are really suffering. People are, you know, in a very stressful situation. They're finding it difficult to make ends meet. They're finding it, they don't know how they're going to pay the water taxes and they're struggling with the property taxes. So it was a tough election for anybody who was associated with being in government. And I just think for the country was in such dire states financially that whoever got in was going to meet the ire of the people, you know. Yeah. And I think if anybody else was in the morning, I think they'd be faced with the same dreadful dilemmas that ministers have to choose between one awful cut or another awful cut, and they make something and they know that's not something they want to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they want to make these cuts, but they just don't have the money to cover the costs of the services that we've provided up to now. So, you know,
that's the way things change.
But the positive thing is now we're seeing that the country is returning to growth, that the people are working. And the really big thing about, you know, we've about 70,000 people working this year that weren't working last year. So we can see that the amount of dole payments we're paying out is dropping, and the amount of income tax that we're receiving is way up from last year.
Okay.
And so that will mean next year's budget will be a little bit easier. And I just hope to God that we don't have to kick people again. That, you know, if we can just...
There's always that button there, Andrew. So I'm not going to go
I don't know.
Go any
further. I wouldn't like to predict anything, but figures are encouraging, let's hope that we don't have to do that.
Well, let's hope your optimism reaches some fruition. I want to ask you about when the idea was thrown out there that you had when you were in the studio maybe 2 years ago or maybe 3 years ago. With time, as you get older, it goes quicker. But when you were talking about the Lord Mayor and the changing of his remit and stuff like that, and when you saw the proposal put forward earlier this year and the way North and South divided, but did that surprise you? And what was your feelings on that?
Well, I was on the committee that put together this proposal for the directly elected mayor for Dublin. Mm-hmm. I'm a very strong believer in that idea. Having been the Lord Mayor for a year, I can see the benefits of the position of a Lord Mayor, how influential the Lord Mayor of Dublin is, even with the limited powers that we have. When I was overseas, when I was in America, when I was in Asia, you know, it really... doors open up when you're the Lord Mayor of Dublin, and I think a directly elected mayor would be very powerful and will be able to bring back jobs to Dublin, encourage investment, encourage tourism, and I think we really need to grab that opportunity. So I was involved in the committee. There was five councillors from each of the four councils in Dublin met on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and 19 of the 20 councillors voted in favour of it. Only one went against it, so I presumed that there'd be strong support. And the mayor of Fingal, Kieran Dennison, was on that committee. He was actually he was the mayor at the time, so he actually drafted this proposal. He voted for it when we met, and then he went back to his own council in Fingal and voted against it. And so I was very surprised at that. I knew that Fingal always seemed to be a little bit less positive, but they never came out downright and said, no, we're not against it. They were just kind of, well, we're not sure. Mm-hmm. But when they went back into their own council, they really just felt it wasn't for them. So, okay, that was the decision, but it's not over now.
Yeah, I think
it's not over yet.
I think, for instance, I mean, it's hinting at it. It's like when there's going to be a budget, the things that they hint at in the paper. But, I mean, I've never heard more talk about this or read so much about it. Hinted at. There's never big headlines. Okay, in the future it's going to be. But I think it is inevitable that this is what's going to happen in the next 5 years at least.
Well, I hope so. Now, what we're proposing is that any proposals we make, they'll be put before the people in a referendum in Dublin. You know, they call it a plebiscite when it's only in Dublin. So we'll be putting that to the people. They will decide whether they want a directly elected mayor or not. And they will then choose who that directly elected mayor will be. Whereas the current situation is the public elect their councillors and the councillors elect the Lord Mayor. So the public don't know who their Lord Mayor is. You know, I was Lord Mayor of Dublin. The vast majority of people don't know me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same for all Lord Mayors. So, you know, it's the occasional one that makes a bit of a breakthrough. Carmen Sita Hederman, obviously, Royston Brady, they were well known. But if there was a directly elected mayor with a competition, people would be putting their ideas forward. What kind of mayoralty would you like to see? I mean, people know, for example, that I'm, you know, I propose the Dublin Bike Scheme that would be very in favour of more cyclists and more cycling in the city. So they know what they're getting, whereas they don't know. They've got Christy Burke at the moment. They'll have somebody else next year. They don't know, who they're going to get, and they've no control over it. So why shouldn't the people of Dublin decide who their Lord Mayor is?
Okay, well, and as far as the powers go and the remit that an elected Lord Mayor would have, the councils would be answerable to him for a start.
Yes, he or she would, they would have to meet with the councillors. That's the model we put forward, that they would have regular meetings with the councillors, and the councillors would be able to question the Mayor, probably in written questions to the Mayor about their... So the Mayor would be involved in things like transport, things like planning, where do we put our houses, what kind of, how do we connect housing and jobs through transport. Then the other things that I talked about there, promoting the city abroad, mm-hmm. Encouraging investment into the region, encouraging more people to come in tourism. And, at the moment, we don't have anybody responsible for Dublin for mm-hmm. transport. We've got a national minister for transport who is remit for the entire country. But we have so many bodies. If you look at Dublin, we have
Dublin. But would you like them to have the same powers, like the city manager, for instance? Like, is that the same type of thing you're talking
Actually,
about?
Actually, probably I'd have probably more powers than the city manager, okay. But in specific areas. For example, in transport, you have Dublin Bus, you have Irish Rail, you have the Lewis companies, you have the National Transport Authority, you've got four different councils. You've got all these different bodies are making their own decisions about transport. They interact and they meet and all that, but... Mm. We need somebody to take control over all that, and somebody who has a democratic mandate, because some people would have a different agenda when it comes to transport. So let the people decide what kind of transport system. But
that brings me to the now, because if that remit was there and the power was there with the Lord Mayor at the moment, you would immediately be in contrast with his idea for the new bus lanes on the North Quays, because he thinks it would be a disaster. Yeah. What do you think of it?
Oh, I think it's something we have to look at. So just for example, there's as many people cycle in Dublin. It's the cycle lane we're looking at along mm-hmm. the North Quays. And there's as many people cycle every day in Dublin as use the Lewis and the Dart combined. And if we were to put in a new Lewis along the quays, I don't think anybody would blink an eyelid. Mm-hmm. But because we're putting in facilities for cyclists, people think, oh, that's an awful waste of money. Whereas actually, we put in the route along the Grand Canal there, and there's as many people cycling down that road. So now there's one lane for cars and one lane for bikes. There's as many people cycling down the road as there are driving down the road. Mm-hmm. So the demand is there for the cyclists, but we don't provide for it. This particular route along the quays came about because the Dublin Bike Scheme is now extending out to the Houston Station, and we want to make sure that people can cycle safely from Houston Station right down to the Point Depot.
Okay.
And that's a notorious area where people have been killed on their bikes a lot of the time, So we want to make that safe. If we're going to put in all these bikes, we want to make it safe, and we know there's as many people want to cycle as want to drive. So if we can have a car lane, why can't we have a bike lane? And, but it needs to be a safe bike lane. And in fact, we will probably get more, there's more capacity for bikes. And it isn't an anti-car thing at all. People think we're trying to stop cars. It's not that at all, because we know there's a lot of people who have absolutely no choice, but they have to drive. You're coming from Kildare, or you're coming from mm-hmm. Meath, or if you're a job, for example, if you're a plumber, you're going to have to go from job to job to job, and you've got all your tools with you. You can't do that on a bicycle. You can't do that on a bus. You have to drive. So we have to provide facilities for drivers. But there's a lot of people who are driving now who would love to use the alternative if it was there. So if we provide good public transport, if we provide good cycling facilities, we can get those drivers off the road and free up the road space for the people who badly need it.
What about some of the places where the path is quite wide and it's in some other European countries where the cycling lanes are actually on the path?
Well, I think that we have to look after our pedestrians, and I have so many people complaining to me about cyclists on footpaths, and I would agree with them. I think it's terrible to see cyclists on footpaths, especially ones that hair down the road and, pass you within a whisker. Mm-hmm. Just think of some elderly people who are so vulnerable. If they fall over and fracture their hip, that really is a serious situation. Or somebody who's blind, or somebody who can't hear, so doesn't hear them coming. Very few of them use the bells on their bike. So I really don't want to see cyclists on footpaths. I want to see them on the roads or on good, high-quality dedicated cycle lanes where they can feel safe, so that you can send your children to school on these cycle lanes that are that safe.
Okay, well, you talked there about cars and cycles getting along together, which is fine. Yeah. But do you think that the enforcement of cyclists who break the law, for instance, there should be more severe or at least sanctioned and upheld.
I think it could be better, and I think it's getting better. I think Gardaí are taking this seriously now. We discuss it. You know, I would have regular meetings with the Gardaí and the...
How does the mobile phone align with a cyclist, for instance? Can you use it?
Can you use it? I'm not 100% sure. Yeah. I know that it probably varies because a lot of the rules of the road are for mechanically propelled vehicles, but it's what they call them, which means cars or trucks or whatever. So they actually may not apply to cyclists. I don't know that one.
Well,
that's one worth checking out.
In some cases, I think for people's own safety, I mean, it should apply to pedestrians as well, because it kills me to see people walk. Even pedestrians, to see two earphones on them or headphones on them when they're walking, it makes them unaware of what's happening. One
that's
earphone
true.
Should be enough. So, it should carry through to everybody, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a fair point. But I would really like to see a clampdown getting cyclists off footpaths, because we really have to look after our pedestrians.
Notoriously going through red lights. I mean, they do.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'd say about cyclists breaking red lights, I hate to see it, and I would encourage people to obey the rules of the road. But there's a lot of talk about cyclists breaking lights, and they do, and I've seen it, and I see it every day. Mm-hmm. But 90% of drivers admit to speeding. So cyclists aren't the only ones breaking the rules of the road. I think it applies across the board.
Yeah, but I'm talking but
we
about
need
enforcement.
To have enforcement. We do need to have enforcement for everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Andrew, that you want to enlighten us with? Future plans, for instance, that you could let us secrets you could let us in on?
I think we're going to be looking at housing. It's the number one issue on the council. We're waiting with bated breath to see who the new ministers are going to be. And I heard rumours that Jan O'Sullivan might be the new Minister for the Environment. But Joan Burton has made it very clear that... providing more housing is her main priority now when she comes in, and that's as it should be, because we need to tackle the housing crisis. We have so many homeless families in Dublin. We have so many people who are living in overcrowded or unsuitable conditions, and we need to provide housing for people who are in, you know, for the homeless, but we also need to provide private housing for normal families who are looking to buy, because the market is just jacking up now. It's back to the old days, and we can't go back to that thing of people, you know, mortgaging themselves up to the hilt.
Okay.
We've got to get control of the housing situation.
The frustrating thing a lot of people will say, I've heard people talking about it over the past couple of years as well, is that, things were worse. People don't seem to realise that things were actually worse in the 80s. Hmm. And it wasn't great in the 70s either. Hmm. But the council at the time, the corporation as it was called in the early days, they had their housing list, and I'm sure they still have the housing list. But it always seemed to work. It seemed to work to keep up with the pace of the population. It doesn't seem to work at all now. That's one point. And the second point is, when you leave here today, even going up the road here, if you cycle around through some of the estates here, some fine houses which are lying idle. They're the immediate things that people could do.
Yes.
As you think, Jan O'Sullivan, who do you think? Has there been any word, by the way? Who's who anyway?
No, it's all speculation.
It's still
so the speculation on RTE website.
I thought you had
before
some
I came in here.
Okay.
I'm just reading off the RTE website. They said they were speculating that Jan O'Sullivan might be the Minister for the Environment, and I hope she does, because she's a real passion about housing. And you're absolutely right, Voids. It breaks my heart. I mean, people ringing me every day in desperate situations. You know, families who are living in hotels and they can't. Living in a hotel sounds great, but you can't wash your clothes, you can't cook for your children, and it becomes a nightmare situation very quickly. And they need a home like everybody else. But also just ordinary families, middle class families who are looking to buy a home, and they see the prices going up and up and up. So we need to build all housing. You know, we need social housing, we need to build regular housing, and we need to build them together, because one thing I don't want to see is I live in Ballymun. I represented Darndale in the past. I don't want to see a big concentration of social housing in one spot. I want to see a mix of tenures. So I'd like to see private and social built cheek by jowl next door to each other.
And what about the houses that are lying idle?
The houses that are lying idle, that's something that we negotiated the budget. I was negotiating the budget for the council last year. We got an extra 2 million at the start of this year from our own funds. And the government has just announced in the last 2 days that they're going to put in an extra 3 million. So actually, it must be a bit more than that, because we're going to have a total of 7 million this year.
Okay.
And we're going to get another 236. So there's about 400 idle houses at the moment. This tranche of money is going to get 236 of those back into working order. And that's something we need to do desperately.
And is that guaranteed exclusive of what's happening with the budget?
Oh, yes, we got that. That was just announced last week.
Okay. Yeah. Listen, Andrew, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have you in the studio, and I hope to talk to you again, and congratulations again on the re-election.
Thanks, Noel.
Thank you.